If you saw Dan Okren on the street, you would notice nothing special about him. He's a white male, gray hair, average height. He'd be wearing a sweater or polo or something normal. He would not have an entourage or a posse. He would be, to you, just a guy. But Dan Okren is not a normal guy. Dan Okren is important. You may have seen Okren on Ken Burns' baseball documentary. By all accounts, he's a successful author and editor, but his biggest achievement, at least in terms of most lives touched, has to be his invention.
Can you just tell me how this whole thing got started?
It started out of desperation and psychosis, I think. Winter of 1979, 1980, and I was missing baseball. And this sort of came to me in a dream, like an opium dream.
This is from the ESPN documentary, Silly Little Game.
I had a really empty life in those years. I was self-employed, living in the country. It was before we had kids. It was before there was an internet.
There were a lot of long and lonely hours on those cold New England winter nights when the sun goes down, you know, about an hour after it comes up. And I don't know, I was missing baseball and thinking about baseball.
I'm a serial obsessive. I get interested in something and I really get interested in it. Baseball has been one of those hearts of my serial obsessions that keeps popping up. Because of the numbers, because of the details, because every act in baseball is recorded. The game as we know it can be recreated from numbers. So I took these numbers and I put them into the framework of a game that would enable me to compete with my friends and show that I knew more about baseball than they did.
If you haven't figured it out by now, Okren is talking about fantasy baseball, or rotisserie baseball, as it was called back then. And he's the guy who came up with it.
So whoever scores the highest in various categories will get points, yada, 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 yada. The team that has the highest number of points wins the pennant. And handed it out to a bunch of friends with whom I had periodic lunches in New York at a lousy restaurant called La Rotisserie Française.
Why do we choose to come to this restaurant?
I give all the credit in the world to Okren and his colleagues for not only coming up with this idea, but writing down the rules, making it something more than their odd hobby. They did something truly special. But if Dan Okren didn't do this, if he were never born, someone else would have come up with the idea for fantasy baseball. As baseball fans, there's something that lives inside of us that needs to feed on the game. We can't just consume it anymore. We need to construct it. We need to know what it would be like if we were a manager or a player or an owner. We always think we're the smartest baseball person in the room, and we need a chance to prove it. Fantasy baseball might be the most outward-facing aspect of this, but it goes deeper. For the past few months, I've gotten an email every day with the box scores for games played in a fictitious 1999 season. That comes from the manager of a simulation league of which I'm a part. He runs these simulations in his computer and emails the league the results. If any random person were to look at these emails, it would look like some sort of strange code. But I've come to be able to read it no problem. Because to me, this is part of being a fan. Of course, being a fan involves watching games in the season and enjoying feel-good stories and the playoffs and the random chases that occur every season. That's a given. But it also involves looking up how many steals Ray Durham had in a fictional game for your fictional computerized team. We all love the game. But it's the game inside the game that brings out the true diehard fans. From the Robin Roberts Memorial Studios in Minneapolis, Minnesota, it's Stealing Home. I'm David Temple. This episode is about the game within, the baseball games we, as fans, play. We're foregoing the news and jumping right into it with a tale of a group of friends, a Super Nintendo, and a goal. Then I speak to Brad Cook from Out of the Park Baseball, perhaps the most addicting thing to happen to the game since chewing tobacco. And Carson Sestouli conducts his own interview of sorts. You'll just have to listen. All that plus the MVP of my heart. It's all coming up on Stealing Home. Let's play ball. Baseball is grounded so much in stories. Not just news stories, but stories that you or your friends or your parents tell and mangle and pass down and recite 1,000 times. One of my favorite baseball stories comes from a group of college friends, and it doesn't even involve real baseball. Well, it was real to them. Maybe I should let them explain.
This would have been the fall of 2004, so it was the start of my junior year in college.
That's my friend, Pat Bentz. We were members of the same fraternity in college. The fraternity had a house, and I didn't live there, but Pat did. So did Phil Snyder.
And we had this house, and at the beginning of the school year, we had this Super Nintendo. Just kind of laying around. And then one day someone was playing Ken Griffey Jr. on the Super Nintendo, and we all kind of got into it, just kind of laughing about how, you know, we were all terrible at it. Like, the computer would just destroy us every time.
I think it started out as Pat was at home during the summer and getting really bored, so he started a season of baseball. And then it kind of, over time, turned into everybody playing as the same team. And then it turned into every day you had a quota and you had to play a certain number of games.
Ryan Cavas was also a member of that house and would become a member of this quest to glory through the ones and zeros coded in to Ken Griffey Jr.'s baseball for the Super Nintendo.
Well, there were very strict rules. There were four of us in the house, and it was required that at some point during the day, each of us had to complete at least one game.
Yeah, well, every day you were required, and it was like a rule, like a house rule, you had to play at least one game of Griffey.
I believe we were the Royals.
We picked the St. Louis Cardinals.
What? No, Pat's totally wrong. That was the second team we played as.
I think we were the Cardinals. It's whatever. I just know that H. Bogart was home, because they were all like, they were all, yeah, but they all, every team had fake names, but they all had some kind of theme that struck them together. And I just remember our team was like old, dead movie stars. And Humphrey Bogart was the greatest player on our team.
Although none of the players had the real names, so the names were things like Humphrey Bogart. Ken Griffey Jr. was the only guy in the game with his actual name.
They had fake names, but you could rename them. And so there was one guy on the team whose name sounded, I think his name was Davis. And so we went in and changed his name to Cavas, which was the last name of one of the guys playing, and he batted ninth. He wasn't very good, but he was a guy who could always be counted on for the bunt single and who could always get a stolen base. So for some reason, he was pretty fast.
Well, I think over the course of like several weeks, they renamed somebody who's, the game only showed you first initial last name, and it was R. Davis, and they named it R. Cavas, but I didn't notice for several weeks, and when I did, I only noticed that he was definitely the worst guy on the team.
Eventually, we decided we were just going to keep playing it all the way out and try and win the World Series. But we wanted to play the World Series at the same time that the actual World Series was happening, which meant we had to play a lot of Ken Griffey Jr. baseball.
And we did that without hitting the reset button once because we wanted to simulate a true season. And so even if you were having the worst game of your life, you could not hit the reset button.
There was no, yeah, there was no reset rule. So if, once you started a game, that was the game.
Like every day when we'd get home from school, everybody else would pressure you and be like, well, did you play your two games today? And you'd say, no. And so they'd make you sit down and play two games. And sometimes at like 11 p.m., you just didn't have it in you to win a game.
Well, I remember if the opposing team hit a ball that got to a long way back in the outfield, like a, you know, a long single or something, if you kind of took your time getting to the ball, then the runners would get cocky and try to take a base that they, you know, wouldn't necessarily do in real life. And every outfielder in that game was outfitted with an Ichiro like cannon for an arm. And so you could do, you know, a no hop throw to home from dead center. And so if you got them to take and to try to take that extra base, you could usually throw them out.
There were tricks you could use, like you could pitch around people, by which I don't mean to walk them, but you, since you could control the ball the entire time, you'd throw it really slow, take it way outside, and then bring it back in for a strike, and the AI could never hit it. But it was kind of considered cheating to do that.
The top of the lineup was real fast, and so I remember we figured out real quick that we could get, like, the first two guys on base consistently just by bunting.
Yeah, there were a couple guys that you could get on base bunting every single time.
We won the National League Central pretty handily.
And then once you got in the playoffs, you know, if we blew it, the whole thing would have went down the tubes, and we didn't. We didn't win every game in the playoffs or in the World Series.
But, I mean, when we got to the World Series, we used every cheap trick in the book. And I remember that in the World Series, I hit a home run for the first time ever. My in-game persona hit a home run for the first and last time in his career.
I remember we won the World Series. We probably took it to 7 games, but we won the World Series. And then we all gathered around the TV in the winning screen that shows Ken Griffey Jr., and saying, you won the World Series, aren't you great, or something. And we took a picture and hung it on the wall, and it was a great time.
Once we won the World Series, we took a picture, and next to the TV where it said World Champion with Griffey there, and we took a picture and we framed it and put it up on the wall. I just remember the time really as a fun time.
They would try to reclaim this magic again, but would lose interest in the next season fairly soon. They had put far too much effort into this project to just do it again. Plus, you know, they had to do homework and stuff. This, in the end, is a silly story, but I love it. Not just because I know the people in it, but because deep down, it's such a baseball story. It's a grand narrative with a collection of disagreed upon facts and events that everyone involved remembers. These guys had classes and papers and finals to worry about, but for a few minutes each day, they took some time to build their own baseball world. And in many cases, a little time is all you need. You may be worried or stressed or sad or tired, but if you can fake a guy into taking off for a second and then gun him down for an out, your day gets a little brighter, even if it's just for a fake inning or two. If you haven't played Out of the Park Baseball yet, you should. It's very good, but be prepared to block off some time. I have never come across a game so addicting. Well, not a sports game anyway. I've logged a lot of hours on those new Batman games. But anyway, for baseball fans, especially fans who think they can run a team, Out of the Park is perfect. It goes from roster and lineup construction down to minor league development, money distribution, and everything in between. Want to pretend you're Miguel Cabrera and smack some dingers? Get MLB The Show, or something like that. Want to swing a three-team deal while personally searching for a new AA pitching coach and adjusting the hot dog prices? Get Out of the Park Baseball. Brad Cook is the PR and marketing manager for Out of the Park Developments, the maker of the game. We chatted over Skype about the game, his relationship with it, and just how expansive it all is. Brad, thanks for joining us on Stealing Home.
Hey, thanks for having me on, David.
We're here talking about Out of the Park Baseball, which is in, at least for the computer version, it's on its 14th instance. I was hoping for those who aren't familiar with Out of the Park Baseball, you can kind of give us maybe the elevator pitch for the game.
Well, it's a baseball management game. It lets you run a team from top to bottom. And you can handle as much or as little as you want as far as running your team goes. But you basically trade players, sign free agents, set your lineups, your pitching rotation, your bullpen roles. You can play out games and make decisions whether to steal, whether to put on a squeeze play. You run the June draft and draft the first year player draft you handle your farm system. You pretty much basically just about everything that goes on with a real baseball team you handle in the game. And the nice thing about it is you can handle as much or as little as you want. So if you don't want to play through games, some people don't like to, you can just have the computer do that. So there's a whole AI that runs below the game and kind of dictates what players and coaches and managers now, how they all behave.
And the AI engine is powered at least in part by technology or projection systems borrowed from Baseball Prospectus. Is that right?
Yeah. The Pecota system is what we're using this year. It's part of our partnership with Baseball Prospectus. And so there's that, and then there's just the whole AI. You know, players have behaviors, so there's a whole morale. Players will feel different ways about their role on the team or their own performance and things like that. That kind of add up to an overall morale. That can, you know, it doesn't have a major impact. If a guy's really upset, it's not like he'll be terrible, but it has a little bit of an impact. And players will actually respond to things you do. So if you're running the Giants and you bench Pablo Sandoval, you know, you'll probably get a message from him within a couple days, you know, complaining that he should be in the starting lineup. And if you persist, he may, you know, demand that you trade him. So the kinds of things that go on in real life will happen while you're playing the game.
I take it that you're a baseball fan. Were there games like this, maybe in more analog forms, that you played when you were growing up as a kid?
Yeah, I've been a baseball fan since I was a kid. I've always loved the sport. I played Strat-O-Matic baseball way back when. I don't know if you've played that at all. The Dyson card game. I never played APBA or Status Pro. I did play Strat-O-Matic. And actually, a friend of mine had this game with a spinner, and I don't remember what it was called. But there were player cards, and it was really simple. You just kind of there was a spinner, and you spun it, and it basically told you what the player did. And obviously, you know, a guy like Babe Ruth would have a nice wide area for a home run or something like that. But there was no, you know, pitcher wasn't really, as I recall, well, maybe the pitcher was taken into account. But I always like playing stuff like that. And on the computer, I remember playing some of the Earl Weaver game on the computer and the Tony La Russa game. I played quite a bit. So I've always been a fan of that kind of thing. I mean, I think more so than playing an arcade game, I just think it's a lot of fun to kind of manage your team and see how they do and try to make those decisions.
I was thinking about that. There are games, football games, you know, like Madden Football, for instance, or there are NBA games that you can play for, you know, Xbox or PlayStation. And most of those games, they do have some sort of at least a differing bits of front office management go in to those games. But it's more about, you know, basically pretending you're the player or pretending you play for a team or you're playing as the members of this team. With games like Out of the Park and others, that even the earlier games that you mentioned, you are pretending basically to be the general manager. And that seems to be, I mean, there are also console games for baseball as well, but it seems like baseball is really the only game that really embraces that idea that, you know, if you're smart and you know what you're doing, you can successfully run a baseball team.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think, you know, baseball is a sport that really lends itself well to this kind of game. You know, everybody loves to, I mean, you know, sports radio talk shows are full of people saying, you know, this team should pull off this trade or that trade, or they should have never signed him to that contract or things like that. So a game like this really lets you, you know, try your hand at that and see how, you know, you find when you play for a few years, it's complicated. You know, if you look at what's going on with the Phillies right now in real life, suddenly they went from being a powerhouse to suddenly they're an aging team, and their farm system was highly rated not too long ago, and now it's one of the ones in the bottom of the ratings, you know, so suddenly they're dealing with all these things that, you know, you step into Ruben Amaro's shoes, and so, you know, the question is, what would you do? You know, everyone's got their opinions, but you find when you play the game, because the game has all the financials, so you've got to take on Ryan Howard's contract, and what do you want to do with that, you know? And if you want to trade him, it's not going to be as simple as just forcing him on another team. I mean, you know, the computer-controlled teams will push back on you. You'll get comments about, you know, they don't want an overpriced veteran, or, you know, you may find someone to trade him to, but it's not as simple as you might think.
And as someone in charge of marketing and PR for this game, I imagine that part of your job is knowing as much as you can about it. And this game, I mean, we talked about some aspects of it, but it goes so much incredibly deeper from, you can play against your friends or strangers, I suppose, online and kind of put up or shut up that way. You can also take control of old franchises. You can pick a franchise from basically any year, at least in the modern history of baseball, and either try to do better or replicate the great season that they had. It gets so deep with the money and every level of the minor leagues. I mean, how long did it take you to absorb all this stuff to the point where you felt comfortable discussing it, you know, at least in a professional manner?
It took a while, and I'm still learning about the game. You know, Marcus, who created it, I still ask him questions sometimes about things in the game, there's a lot in there, and there are a lot of little functions and little things, little boxes you can check off for different things. So yeah, you can really get lost in the weeds. And like you mentioned, you know, you can go back in time. You can actually go back all the way to 1871, and play. Yeah, and you play forward from there. So you can recreate, you know, just about all of baseball history if you want to, and create an alternate timeline. You know, when you go back in time, as you play forward, you can decide whether players, you know, show up on their real teams when they really did. So Mickey Mantle shows up on the Yankees when, you know, the year he debuted, or you can say that those players go in the draft. So, you know, if you're running, let's say, the Pirates, you get a shot, you know, you could potentially draft him if you want. And he may turn out to be the same guy he was in real life, or he could be a bust, you know, just like in real life, highly rated prospects don't always pan out. So there's, and you can actually also have players randomly show up throughout history. So Mickey Mantle could show up today. So it's, there's a lot of different ways you can play and different things you can do. It's pretty amazing.
Now, I play in a simulation league that is technically online, in that we do all our transactions and updates. This is with a different kind of setup, but it's all our transactions and updates and drafts take place via email, basically. So it's online in that sense, but it's still very, very kind of primitive and analog. With kind of the explosion of fantasy baseball, especially the ease that the internet brought to it, the ease at which you could access it and play against friends or anybody you wanted to all the way around the world. Is that something that Out of the Park wanted to tap in with their online leagues and something that they, I mean, it seems like something they're really embracing, kind of a different take on fantasy baseball.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we realize people want to play against each other, and you know, the way we have it set up with online leagues, I mean, we've made it easier to find and join online leagues now. If you know, you can see a list of them and apply to join one if you want. Of course, our forum is a great place for people to stop by and learn more about online play. But yeah, it's definitely something that we've embraced. I mean, it really helps build our community, and it's something we want to do, you know, more and more with moving forward. I know you've seen the real-time simulation feature that was added last year. And so one of the updates last year we did, you know, you can now broadcast the real-time sim on a web page for your online league. So, you know, I talked to someone not too long ago who told me in his online league, they all get together online at a certain time every night, and they run the commissioner, you know, basically broadcasts that real-time sim. And of course, you can set the speed. I mean, you could do it in actual real time, which means it takes several hours, but you can speed it up a bit and speed it up as much as you want. And, you know, that's what they do. I think they've got it sped up. So it takes them about 20 minutes or so, and they chat while the games go on, and you can see all the scoring plays that happen and the stuff that's going on. And it's kind of a, you know, sports center kind of presentation. So yeah, I mean, that's the kind of stuff, you know, we want to definitely do more with. I mean, as the game grows and we sell more and we get more of a budget, I'm sure Marcus would love to really do more with the online side of it.
And that dovetails into something I wanted to discuss too. One of the, just with the few people I've talked to regarding this game, well, there's a review on your website from about.com, which I actually think sums it up perfectly. The review is, just one more pitch will become just one more game that will become just one more season until you're hopelessly hooked. And I think that's such a good, I mean, I haven't been playing that long. I only go back maybe two or three versions. But it does have that quality to it where, and you think maybe it's something that would wear off once kind of the new card or the new game smell goes away. But it's really something that you can sit down and just start kind of aimlessly, you know, maybe while you're watching another baseball game on TV or doing something else. And, you know, minutes turn into hours quite quickly. It's actually something I've had to uninstall from my work computer because it's taking up too much of my time. Is it, do you get a lot of feedback like that from other people about just how time consuming this game turns out to be in the long run?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely something that that people love. It's funny because last year there's a guy at a blog who told me, you know, he said, I got a wife and kids and I got a full-time job and everything. And I just, you know, the PC Mac game just seems like something I could get myself way too lost in. So he wanted to try our iOS game. They reviewed it on their site. You know, we've got the iOS version, which is much more geared toward casual simming. It doesn't have full minor leagues. It's you know, doesn't have nearly as much in terms of the functionality, but he checked that out. He reviewed it, and you know, he kept playing the game, and he kept talking about playing on Twitter. And he would post screenshots. He was running he's a Rays fan, and you know, he played decades and decades into the future with the Rays, and he kept posting. And every so often, he'd comment, you know, I play a lot while I'm at work. because he's got his iPhone in his pocket, just pulls it out and plays, you know. And it's funny because in the end, he's probably spending quite a bit of time just playing that game, which is not nearly as in depth, you know, thinking, well, I'm not going to get myself lost in the full version. But So yeah, I mean, there is an allure to that, and I've experienced it too. I like to play the iOS game on my iPad, and you know, there's definitely that allure because you can get through a season pretty quickly. I mean, if you want to, it depends, you know, how much micromanagement you want to do. But you know, you can, you know, in an afternoon maybe get through a couple seasons if you want to play rather quickly. And you know, and then you start building up a history, and then you start saying, well, geez, you know, I missed the playoffs 2 years in a row. What do I need to do to really, you know, turn this team around, you know, to get to the next level? And you can just get kind of lost in all that stuff. And again, that comes back to this idea that, you know, you've stepped into the shoes of a general manager. You know, imagine a typical big league GM sitting in his office, you know, just trying to figure out, you know, man, you know, I mean, he's trying to keep his job, but hey, we were 500 last year. You know, what do we do? How do we get to that next level? So yeah, it can really suck you in.
And I imagine that some of our listeners aren't familiar with the game, and so hopefully this discussion will turn them toward it. If you had any advice for new players, people who had just picked up the game, where would you start if you were able to start fresh? Because there's so much stuff that you can dig into right away. What do you think is kind of a logical progression into becoming a player of Out of the Park Baseball?
Well, you know, I think the easiest place to start is the current season. You know, we always have that button to, you know, so in 14, there's the button to click to start a 2013 Major League season. Everyone's got their favorite team or favorite teams. So, you know, it's pretty easy to dive in. In just a couple steps, you kind of set yourself up, pick your team. One of the first things I do is go into manager options and have the computer handle my farm system. So the AI will kind of move players up and down the system. You know, I decide if I want to bring them up to the big league level, but that kind of takes, you know, some stuff off your plate, and you're not going to call some guy up, you know, a poor position player who's exhausted because he's been playing to death and you were supposed to be paying attention to that. So that's something I always recommend to people, you know, make just do that, you know, to start with. Just focus on your big league club. And there's that manager home screen that alerts you to the tasks you need to take a look at, you know, anything important you should know about. So take a look at that, you know, and kind of set your lineups, your pitching rotation, your bullpen duties. All that stuff's, you know, filled in for you, but everyone wants to tweak that and make their changes and, you know, decide what they think is best. So yeah, I mean, that's probably the best way to go, to kind of, you know, dip your toe in the water and kind of get set up and get going. And then that starts you right before the regular season starts. So just, you know, go ahead and sim the game forward until your first game, and, you know, probably check out the in-game options. So, you know, play out a game and decide whether to steal, put on the hit and run, etc. So yeah, that's kind of my overview.
Well, just simply talking about it with you, and please don't take any offense by this, but talking about this makes me want to immediately hang up and launch the game again and do a bunch of other things that are in my brain.
Yeah.
But Brad Cook, the game is tremendous, and I honestly can't get enough of it. I thank you and everybody at Out of the Park Developments for the game, and I'm already looking forward to the next version. So thank you very much for joining us on Stealing Home.
Thanks, David.
Carson Sestouli is a writer, editor, and podcast host at Fangraphs.com. Since I write for NotGraphs, he is technically my boss. He is also a person I consider a friend. I know that he deals quite a bit in the realm of baseball's inner game, as he has a semi-regular Stratomatic League, plays in a good deal of fantasy, and also is involved in simulation leagues. And since he's a friend, and since he's a very good writer, I asked him to do a piece for this episode. What he did was create a short episode of his own podcast, Fangraphs Audio. Enjoy.
That is Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass. I'm Carson Sestouli, and this is a special edition, of Fangraphs Audio, produced specifically for David Temple's very excellent, very able Stealing Home podcast. My guest on this edition of the podcast is right-hander Ernest Burns. If you, the listener, if you are unfamiliar with Burns or his team, the Burlington Aristocrats, it's because both. It's very likely because both of those things are entirely fictional. The Burlington Aristocrats are, of course, my team that I have in Aaron Gleeman's Hardball Dynasty League at whatifsports.com. Hardball Dynasty being that site's baseball simulation that allows him to serve both as GM and manager of an entire major league franchise. After making the NLCS last season, which was the 25th season of Aaron Gleeman's Hardball Dynasty League, Burlington began the present season well, the season 26, began it well, but has struggled of late, falling below 500 recently, unfortunately, and much of that due to the neglect of the host of this very special edition of Fangraphs Audio. I talked very briefly with Burns, that is Ernest Burns, my right-handed closer this weekend. What follows is my conversation with him. It's Fangraphs Audio, and it features entirely fictional baseball pitcher Ernest Burns, and it begins right now. So because listeners will hear it first, and really honestly because I'm curious about it, I'd like to ask you about your voice. How you got it, how any sort of computer-generated baseball player gets a voice.
Well, it's not precisely right to say that it's my voice. It's actually the default voice for the operating system installed on your computer. This sounds like the voice call Sam that comes as part of Windows XP, which means you're using Windows XP, for some reason, a thing that was released originally in 2001.
I am actually using Windows XP. It's my old laptop. I do have Windows 7 on a new laptop, but it's a Lenovo, and I guess Lenovos don't permit recording from the desktop or using the stereo mix, which, as you can tell, is necessary for this interview.
Oh, right. Well, it's for the best, probably. The default voice for Windows 7 is a woman's voice called Anna. It's no problem for me either way, on account of how I don't have any feelings. But it's less confusing this way.
So this is actually interesting to me, though. So your voice changes based on the medium through which you're being observed. I'm reminded in this case of the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, right? Because if I change the way I'm observing you, you yourself change. If I'm using Windows XP and then I use Windows 7, your voice goes from Sam to the woman's voice, Anna.
I believe it's called the observer effect, actually, which is frequently mistaken for Heisenberg's uncertainty principle.
Sure. Yeah, you're exactly right. But I think the point stands, though, right, is that by virtue of the fact that I'm viewing you through this particular operating system, you in fact are different, you seem different.
Yes, that's true. That's it. It's probably fair to say that all identity is a construction and is always dependent on the context of the viewer, as well. A woman most readily identifies you as a man. A black person might mostly readily identify you as white. A foreign person, as American. You have little control over it. As little as I do over my voice, really.
So you seem to have a very nuanced understanding of identity politics for a computer-generated baseball player. Are you very educated or just mostly educated?
I have a degree in nothing. I'm the product merely of code by the designers of whatifsports.com.
And yet you're rather articulate.
By saying so, you flatter yourself, whom you know quite well has written my portion of the script in addition to your own.
Well, yeah, that's very possible. Although, to be fair, I perhaps we might say it's half flattery, right? Because, for example, the line about the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, my confusion of it with the observer effect, I purposely made that mistake, which I don't think necessarily reflects very well upon me.
True. If you have one skill, it's that you understand the value of self-defacement, superficially, at least.
In terms of skills, one of them recently, for me, has not been keeping the pitching staff of which you're a part, of the Burlington Aristocrats. One of my skills has not been keeping that pitching staff very fresh. A lot of you are below the 80 or 85% threshold, and many of you are in the red, the sort of below 80, I mean, some of you near zero, actually.
You had gone sometimes 2 or 3 days without logging into the site at all.
Well, I will say this. It has been more difficult since the start of the actual baseball season. I think I started I'm in my second season now. The first season 25 of the league, it was a lot easier because that started in, like, November, like late November or early December or whatever. Since the actual season has started, though, it's become much more difficult to keep up, especially now that actual fantasy baseball, it should be said, has started.
It makes no difference to me, as you might have anticipated. I'm merely code. However, you're paying something like $25 or more for the season, aren't you? Imagine what your wife would say about that.
Yes, and with that, it appears as though we're out of time. We're out of time. I'd like to thank you, Ernest Burns, right-hander for the Burlington Aristocrats, for joining me on this special edition of Fangraphs Audio.
I'd say it were a pleasure, but that's an emotion of which I know nothing.
That is Ernest Burns. I am Carson Sestouli, and this has been Fangraphs Audio.
Carson Sestouli is a writer, editor, and podcast host at Fangraphs.com and is, at least at the time of this recording, my favorite person on planet Earth. You can follow all of his writings at Fangraphs.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at CISTULLI. To end every show, we take a look at someone who, for reasons on the field or off, deserve a little love. It's the MVP of my heart. As part of a weird regimen, I started this season. I've been watching a lot of Houston Astros games. It's kind of a long story. I'll put the link to the explanatory article in the show notes. As sort of a newly minted Astros fan, I knew what to expect coming into the season. I knew they were going to be bad. I have very smart friends who said that they were going to be bad. But as of today, they have 8 wins and 23 losses. That's good for a .348 winning percentage. They've played 31 games and have already had games where their opponents have scored 11, 17, and 19 runs. Look, I don't need to tell you. They've been crummy. You know this. But I watch the games, and the cameras inevitably point to manager Bo Porter. Porter is only 40 years old, and I'm sure he's thrilled to get a shot managing a big league club. And I'm sure that he and the head brass have sat down and talked about expectations for the team. But no amount of coaching could have prepared anyone for this. None. And yet, he's stoic. He watches from the dugout, cool as a cucumber. The season is still young, and there could be meltdowns to come, but I don't think that will happen. Porter seems to be handling it all with great poise. When I have a crappy day at work, I can tell almost anyone I want. I can complain to my wife, my friends, my coworkers, my parents. When Bo Porter is frustrated, who can he talk to? Only close family, and even then, he has to be careful. Because anything he says can leak. And leaks create rumors and bad press and clubhouse problems. Porter has enough problems, as it is. I imagine him being on his third steering wheel, since he's taken out his aggression on the last two during drives home. Maybe he has a heavy bag in the basement. Maybe he has like 300 of those stress balls. I don't care how cool or collected you are. That's a lot of losing. Even the Fonz would get rattled. It goes to show just how coveted managing jobs are. Guys will watch his team eat it every day just for the chance to be in the dugout. I'm not sure it will happen, but I hope Bo Porter gets to stay. The Astros will get better, probably quicker than most think. And when they do, when all those prospects start marching up to the bigs, I hope Porter is there to greet them. Yeah, sure, he got to live the dream and made a decent living doing it, but the guy deserves a break. He shows up, gets dressed, and voluntarily watches some of the worst baseball going on right now. And though it's probably killing him inside, he won't let anyone know it. And for that, Bo Porter is the MVP of my heart. That's it for this episode of Stealing Home. Thanks goes out to Ryan Cavas, Pat Bentz, Phil Snyder, Brad Cook, and Carson Sestouli. All of your Stealing Home needs are at stealinghome.org. You can get show notes for this episode and every episode past. You can get links to our sponsors like Audible and the Hall of Nearly Great. You can donate to the show. You can get any pertinent links, and you can also submit a contact form if you have any ideas for an upcoming episode or for a show theme, or if you just want to give your feedback, feel free to do so at stealinghome.org. Don't forget to follow us on social media. You can find our Facebook page at facebook.com/stealinghomeradio and on Twitter at stealinghomeorg. I'm your host, David Temple. We'll see you all next time on Stealing Home.